You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello, we are back, the dynamic duo with another Locked On Wolves podcast. Trey Flynn, Colt Molesky bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Just wanted to remind everyone, I know it's been a minute since I have last, but remind you, if you have a smart speaker in the house, just yell at that thing, play the Locked On Wolves podcast, and it'll pop up because we are everywhere. SoundCloud, Spotify, we're on iTunes, we're on Podcastbean, all of those places. You can find our podcast anywhere, and the smart speaker will bring that up really conveniently for you. And today, we're just going to be talking about the big fight that happened last night because the Timberwolves don't play basketball anymore. They just helped Gorgui get his fight career started, right?
Yeah, I guess Gorgui Dieng wants to, hang up the jersey and get in the MMA pretty soon because he looked like he was just about to, end Devin Booker's life the other night. I mean, I know Devin Booker was super excited. I'm sure some people saw the highlight of that security guard holding Booker's jersey, essentially ripping his jersey away so he can't go fight Dieng. But, that would have been some pay-per-view stuff right there, Colton.
Yeah, I also love the comments from Gorgui afterwards saying that he knows that a bunch of guys in the NBA think they're all that, but there's not really any truly hard, grueling NBA players. What was the exact quote? I know a bunch of guys think they can swing, but none of them can. Something like that. It was fantastic.
Yeah, he's not somebody I want to meet in alleyway and not be in a good mood. I feel like he would go real hard. I don't know, man. A Devin Booker, Gorgui Dieng matchup, he might end Booker's career real fast. And, I can't believe we could have got that on the court. It was just funny to see Booker see Dieng, meet me, in the hallway, essentially. And then Booker go, oh, all right, I got you, bro. Let's go do this. It was, so casual, and he just starts sprinting. It was crazy.
I'm not going to lie to you. When one of the people in the fight has a 7'3" wingspan, I feel like you have to put him as the -250 favorite. That alone, I feel like, really gives him a serious advantage. I also like how we are able to track through the season Gorgui's fight career. So he first challenges Dame Moore to come throw on a jersey so he can rough him up. So now he's gone from wanting to fight journalists and reporters to wanting to fight actual NBA players. I feel like this is almost like this movie playing out in front of us where we're seeing the narrative arc of Gorgui's fight career.
I totally forgot about that tweet to Dan Moore. That was hilarious. When he did that, I was like, all right, that was a little too far, but I kind of love it. Love calling us out. That's hilarious. And now he's calling Devin Booker out. He doesn't see anybody as different. He just wants to call everybody out. I'm totally cool with that. We've been talking about how we need somebody to be some kind of Patrick Beverley off the bench. Is it Gorgui Dieng?
I mean, I guess it might. I would really love, I know he was only in for 5 minutes, but I would really love for somebody who maybe could hit threes more just to talk smack. But I guess if Gorgui's the guy, he can be the goon on this team and keep other players in check and make sure that nobody is, I guess, I don't even know what the term would be, though, because he's picking the players that I would never suspect would be, hustling and giving problems to guys like Karl-Anthony Towns or Derrick Rose. I didn't see Devin Booker being the guy that we had to call out and handle on the other team. But I guess, I mean, I'm not playing, so I don't know what's going down exactly, but I guess he's the problem on the Suns that he had to take care of.
I definitely would have thought if it was anybody, it would be Kelly Oubre. I feel like he's the only guy that would try to.
No,
fight
he doesn't somebody. Do that anymore. He's grown now, according to reports after the game. He's grown up since the Boston Kelly Olynyk fight.
That Kelly Olynyk push has to go down in history as one of the hardest pushes of all time. I've never seen somebody use all their momentum to push somebody down. Also, Kelly Olynyk's the best flopper of all time. I just wish I would see that from Gorgui Dieng, just a flop once in a while, but he just wants to fight everybody, so that's fine. That's good. I can deal with that. But kind of going back to what you're saying with three-point shooting, it would be nice if one of our actual good players, not that Gorgui Dieng isn't good.
Hey, careful. He might come for you.
It would be nice if one of our good players had that attitude,
I know where you're coming from. It would be really nice if Wiggins could develop this edge. Maybe he will. Maybe Gorgie will take him under his very long wing and develop that edge. I would like to go down this rabbit hole just a little bit further. I did not think about the Kelly Oubre thing while I was watching the game last night. I did look it up after I saw his comments on Twitter much later after the game, and I ended up watching that clip that he of the Boston fight he had in the playoffs, I believe it was. I watched that about 500,000 times last night, and I will say this. I did not remember that not only did he blow up Kelly Olynyk, he also did it, like, through a ref. Like, the ref saw that this was coming and went to grab Kelly Oubre, and he still passed, like, through the arm of the ref, managed to smash this huge white dude to the ground with this nasty push that involved a lot of elbows to the upper part of Kelly Olynyk's body. And so I was very impressed with that, and I would have loved to have seen him just come out of nowhere and deck Gorgie and both benches clear, but I'm a little bit on the side of chaos, so maybe I'm biased.
Yeah, I live outside of DC, and so I go to a lot of Wizards games, and it's pretty crazy when I see, like, when I go to see a game. I've seen Kelly Olynyk play in Washington, I think, twice now, and both of those games, just in my environment, like, I'm not a huge Kelly Olynyk fan by any means, but, like, just sitting in the crowd and having those fans just, like, tear Kelly Olynyk's name to shreds and, like, threaten his family. Like, the Wizards fans in DC hate Kelly Olynyk regardless of if Kelly Oubre plays there or not, just because of, like, what he did in a Boston jersey in the playoffs against them. In that fight, whatever you want to call it, against Kelly Oubre, like, Kelly Olynyk is just, he's not welcome in Washington, like, ever again.
I love it. I love weird NBA rivalries between guys who are definitely not the main players on teams. I really appreciate that, and I really appreciate the rifts that causes between fan bases and these random players. I enjoy it quite thoroughly. We're going to actually talk about the game now. First, we're going to get to some sponsors. All right, so we talked about the fight. I feel like we covered the angles on the fight pretty well. Still waiting for a fight promoter to contact Gorgie. We will have the breaking news on that once that happens on the show for sure. But another thing happened last night, which was a game that we actually thought the Timberwolves might end up blowing. They destroyed the Suns. They're up by as many as 30 in this game. They outscored them every quarter they were playing, and they really took care of business. They did a great job of attacking a small ball lineup that they had to throw out there because Ayton was out again for this game, and so they did start Bender at the center position, and great job by the Timberwolves attacking that weaker front court. You had Towns with 25 points, 18 rebounds, 13 points, 7 rebounds from Gibson, and just a phenomenal performance from the big guys in this one. Even a guy who doesn't see a ton of action, Deng, was off the bench. He played for 14 minutes in this game, had himself 4 points and 5 boards, but a great job from the bigs in this game to really control the glass. 64 rebounds in this game to only 34 for the Suns, and they ended up with 20 offensive rebounds to just 5 for the Suns. Just dominating the glass were the Timberwolves, and it really showed both in the box score and in the final score, 118-91. They crushed the Suns. This was a really important game, I thought, for the Timberwolves because they have had some weak performances when they're supposed to be taking care of business, but they really took care of business last night.
All I can say without bringing up any Minnesota news right now is holy Josh Jackson. Like, I don't even need to talk about a Timberwolves player. I'll just say that they won. They're supposed to win against the Phoenix Suns. But I saw some Josh Jackson there, and I immediately was like, can we get that out of Andrew Wiggins? And how sad is that, Cole? Now, I see Josh Jackson score 27 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, and I'm looking at him being like, and Wiggs can't do this? Like,
and you're all sorts of jealous. I understand this point of view. We talked about this a little bit going into this second game, but he has come out of no. I mean, the last 3 games, he's averaging 16.7 points per game, shooting 42% from the field, averaging 6 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block per game. And this, over the course of the season, he's only putting up 9.9 points, 4.1 rebounds, 2.3 assists. I mean, he's coming out of nowhere these last few games, this last week really, averaging 27.5 minutes per game. And I don't know. I mean, it's not a very big sample size. I would love to see this continue just for him personally for the next, like, 2 weeks, this run that he's on. But for a guy who there's a lot of expectations coming out of Summer League, and then he's really kind of thrown up a dud of a season so far, it is really good to see him explode onto the NBA scene again, just because he is a tremendous athlete. And watching him play these last couple of games against the Timberwolves, it has been really fun to watch him do work. I know maybe that's a weird thing to say when you're covering the team that he's dicing up, but it's fun to see really good athletes play really well. I don't think that's a hot take.
No, I don't. Who's just known as a true athletic player to kind of have an all-around game. I mean, he had 3 blocks in that game against Minnesota. Like, I got to shout him out. Like, I just was witnessing, like, a guy break through his mold a little bit, and I was like, oh, okay, like, that's awesome. Like, Wolves get, like, a 20-point win, almost a 30-point win, and I was like, I also got to see Josh Jackson finally come back and do well. Also, kind of like a glaring number I noticed, from the stat sheet after finishing the game the other night, was Jared Bayless was the third leading shot taker out of both teams with 16 shots. Like, I didn't realize when watching, I saw Bayless chuck up a couple threes where I was like, was that necessary? But I didn't think he took 16 shots, Cole, and he was 5 of 16 from the field, and he had 28 minutes off the bench. What are your thoughts on all that production from Bayless, or lack of production sometimes?
Not only did he take 16 shots, he took 11 threes in this game. And I'm all for the Timberwolves trying to really stretch the floor. Really loved Okogie going 4 of 7 from three-point land last night. I'm not sure how I feel about Bayless knocking or trying to knock down 11 three-pointers. He only hit 4 of them. I don't know. Part of me thinks that this is probably bad and that this could lead to some real chucking mentality from Bayless, and I don't want to see a ton of games where he's putting up double-digit shots from three-point range while he's only hitting 36% of his shots. But I do like that they were stretching the floor still, even though you do really want to attack. And they did a good job attacking the front court that the Suns were putting out there, knowing that you could win most of your matchups on the glass against those guys. That said, 42 three-point attempts from the Timberwolves, I really like them spacing the floor. And I thought it just looked easier for Gibson and Towns to do stuff down low. And there was a lot of lanes open for guys like Okogie and Wiggins. And so while maybe Jared Bayless isn't the guy you want consistently taking double-digit three-point attempts, it is good to see the Timberwolves not go for more than 28 three-point attempts in a game. And if this is what it takes to get them trending this way, then I'm all for it, because the flow of the game down low for the Timberwolves and the space that they had in the lane to drive was a lot better in this game. And I know the Suns don't have a great defense anyway, so those are probably there regardless. But I think that this is the right trend, and maybe you don't take 42 three-point attempts every game, but I think that they should be taking 32, 33 three-pointers in a game. And I think that's the kind of rhythm that you want from the Timberwolves offense. And so if they can move towards that, if Jared Bayless is the one leading that charge, I guess so be it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's Jared Bayless that takes his team to be more innovative from the three-point line, then why not, right? Like, and he did shoot 36.4% from three. Like, he made 4 of those 11 shots, which were, honestly, a lot of those threes were just kind of chuck 'em up, community center, best basketball player on the court kind of shots, like where you
– George Costanza chucker center shots.
you're a local gym, and then you see a guy pulling up from three. You're like, all right, I'm just going to let that guy do it. It's the guy you pass to. He just immediately shoots. Like, you know, every gym has that guy. And that was essentially Jared Bayless in this game, for better or worse. But, like, I mean, he opened up the lanes for guys to shoot those shots. Like Josh Okogie, who only played 24 minutes but was 4 of 7 from three-point. So if they can take close to 35 threes a game, they had 42 in this one, that'd be pretty key for them moving forward. I'd like to see more of that from Towns, and maybe not Wiggins, but Towns, Derrick Rose, some Anthony Tolliver action there too. That'd be nice. But yeah, overall, really good game from all these guys. Nobody really had an outlandish game where they just did really poorly. The only guy who I was kind of surprised about, who honestly, Cole, I've been looking at these numbers with past 10 games, hasn't got a lot of production in general, is Dario Saric. And I'm not sure what to do with him moving forward. Like, I really have been on this, you know, on this move, moving him to the starting lineup over Taj Gibson. But Dario just hasn't seemed to find his right mold in this lineup yet. I'm not really sure if he is, you know, fine as a bench player. He just, he needs to get on those hot streaks, and he's such an all-around good player. Like, he had 5 points, 3 assists, 4 rebounds. That's just, like, a microcosm of what he's capable of being on this league, like a 13, 6, and, like, 3 guy, which would be really solid as a starting power forward. I think he has a lot of potential there, and I feel like we're kind of wasting his potential moving forward off the bench. What are your thoughts on that?
I love this question, and I think this kind of keys a little bit into the thing I wanted to finish on. Let's get to some sponsors quick before I answer, though. Trey asking a fantastic question. What do we do with Dario Saric? He's been having some weird nights, and that's the strange thing when you're looking at him. Is there a potential for him to be better? Because there's some games where he comes off the bench and has 22 minutes and is just exactly what they needed coming off the bench and exactly what that second unit needed. And some in over the last couple of games, he's had some really weird games where it almost he'll grab a few boards, he'll get a few assists still, but it seems like he can't really find a rhythm as far as shooting and as far as scoring in the offense. It seems like he is having some trouble finding a rhythm off the bench. Do you, I'm not sure if that gets fixed if he's starting, though, because he does get a pretty decent amount of time with some of the starters in some of these games. Not all of the games, granted, but there are some games where he's playing a pretty solid amount of minutes with Towns and with Wiggins. So do you think that his stats change if he comes off the, if he's starting instead of coming off the bench, or do you think that they're just not using him right in general?
I mean, Brett Brown, the head coach of Philadelphia 76ers, used to, like, say Dario Saric was an all-mental guy. Like, he would play really well if he was, like, mentally in the game. I mean, that's most players, but him more so than most guys. So that's why he used him in the starting lineup a lot. He really liked getting fired up early on, and he would continue that stretch. He's kind of like one of those hot spark plugs. Like, once you get him going, he's nonstop all over the court, super hustle guy, super gritty. The kind of player that every team wants. And so I just think this, like, kind of bench role and him coming to Minnesota when he didn't want to come in the first place isn't the best idea. I think a good example would be, and obviously two different talents, but, like, what Golden State is doing right now with DeMarcus Cousins by putting him in the starting lineup for his confidence when obviously he should be coming off the bench, coming back from a horrible Achilles injury that most players don't come back from. I think just putting him in that starting lineup really helps his confidence moving forward, and his production will probably increase as he gets healthier. And I kind of feel the same way about Dario Saric, but with, like, his mental health. Like, I feel like he did not want to lead that Philadelphia team. He was pretty adamant about that. And he didn't want a bench role when he first came here. He said he expected to start as soon as he got traded. So he hasn't commented on that recently, which just means he's probably a solid team player just doing what the team is asking of him.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're not utilizing the potential stretch four that he is in the modern NBA that every team could use right now in a Dario Saric. You know, a guy who almost won Rookie of the Year. Like, he's a really good player, and he shouldn't be putting up, you know, the inconsistent numbers he's been putting up as of late. And I'm not really sure what the answer is besides starting him, because, like you're saying, he's still getting minutes, and it's not like he's playing against with scrubs. He's playing with Towns and Wiggins for a lot of these minutes. So he's getting, you know, a nice amount of minutes, a good chunk with good players, and he's just not being consistent. I think it's just a mental thing for him. I just don't think it's a bad idea to try it out as a starting for it. It's like, what can Minnesota lose from doing that?
Well, maybe some of that inconsistency, too, is part of the problem when you don't know night to night if you're going to be playing a bulk of your minutes with the starters, or if you're going to be playing a bulk of minutes with the second unit, if you're going to be playing a bulk of minutes in a bigger lineup, or if you're going to be more the small ball five. It still feels like they're figuring out the pieces from that trade, and I think they really, despite the injury problems, I think they really know how to play Rocco for maximum success, and I still don't know if they know the exact best way to utilize Sarge. And the problem is, too, is that in some of these games, I think that Taj Gibson is really justifying the role that he's in. I mean, you look at, I know that his numbers aren't going to blow anybody away from last night's game, but 13 points, 7 rebounds. I mean, he got some really important rebounds. He got to the line a bunch of times. He led the team in free throw attempts the other night against the Suns and hit 71% of his free throws. I mean, Taj, even in 24 minutes, he's still doing really important things, and he's playing so efficiently. Like last night, 57% from the field. He's not taking ill-advised shots. He's playing really efficiently. He's not playing outside of himself. And so he's still not giving the Timberwolves a real reason to bench him outside of the fact that they maybe just need to experiment a little more with Sarge. And so that's what's also making this decision, I think, even more difficult for Saunders.
Yeah, and also just, like, I totally agree. Like, Taj Gibson's been playing, like, how he's always played throughout his career. He's such a solid veteran that knows his role better than any player in the league, really. Like, he's one of the top guys that knows his role and that sticks to it and listens to the coach when asked. He's a real military guy. He feels like a military brat-ish kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And he just is, like, so adamant about just doing whatever it takes for the team to win, and that's what I love about Taj Gibson. It's just – with guys like Dario being so young, like you wanna keep, like, if we're talking about the future of this team, right, Colton? Like, the future seems pretty obvious. It's Carl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, but then who else is it? You know, is it Robert Covington, Dario Saric? If so, like, I think keeping the top four or five guys in this team that are gonna get you to the playoffs happy makes the most sense. So I just feel like they gotta figure it out. And you're totally right. It could just be this lineup with all the injuries since the trade that's just been kind of wacky, that's been throwing off these lineups. But also, just like, the Timberwolves signed Anthony Tolliver this past offseason after losing Nemanja Bjelica, and not knowing that they're going to get Dario Saric, a similar player to Anthony Tolliver. Obviously, Saric is better and he's more well-rounded than Tolliver, but it's still a similar stretch forward, similar idea of what kind of offense you need to run. So bringing Tolliver, Saric, and Gorgui Dieng off the bench next to each other and playing Tolliver at the three has been really awkward for Saric. So just moving those kind of lineups around has been tough for Thibodeau and now Saunders. So it's kind of hard or difficult to see what you got to do moving forward. Maybe it's just what Darren Wolfson said our earlier podcast, like move a guy like Tolliver. But I don't know. You know, for right now, it's a close to a 30-point win, so I'm happy about it. It's just going to be tough for the next three games against L.A. and then Utah. And Utah, I think it's two games in a row against the Jazz. But It'll just be tough to get, with Dario moving forward if he's already playing inconsistent.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that if you're naming the guys that are for sure on the roster the next, even just the next 2 years, Wiggins, Towns, I think, would be those guys. Covington, I can't remember, does he have 2 years or 3 years left on that deal that he signed with the 76ers?
I think it's 2 years and a team option.
Yeah, that sounds right. And then after that, honestly, depending on what the rest of the season looks like for Saric, I know that he has either he's a free agent or he's got a team option this summer. But maybe Tyus Jones is the next guy on that list over Saric, I honestly think, as far as guys that you need to keep around for the next couple of years and who you definitely want to have on this team for at least the next 3 years. I think that Tyus Jones is the next guy on that list. And as of right now, because of both the pieces on this team that you're not sure are going to be there or not, and just you're not exactly sure if you can get the most out of Saric, I think that Tyus Jones is the next on the list, and I'm not sure where that leaves Saric, at least right now.
I mean, that's a pretty solid starting five, you know? Like, in the future, like, Tyus Jones, Robert Covington, Andrew Wiggins, Dario Saric, and Karl-Anthony Towns, like, I don't disagree with you, Colton. I feel like that is the five. You know, it's kind of tough to say who the fourth guy would be. Like, yeah, you're right. There's definitely an argument to be had there with Tyus and Dario. Mm-hmm. But just naming those five guys, like, that gets me excited for the next few years. And I think it should get Wolves fans excited too. But they have a logjam, right? They have an obvious logjam at the four and at the one. They have a logjam at the point guard position, a logjam at the power forward position. And it's tough to see what they're going to do moving forward. You know, of course, if this team is healthy, it'd be easier for us to, like, construct trades and figure out where to move what guy. But guys are hurt right now, so players just need to play in general. So I'm not going to get too excited about the trade part of this or aspect of this. But, like, it's pretty obvious that they have too many players or too many options at the point guard and power forward position to kind of find a very, you know, productive lineup or roster structure. So it's just hard for Minnesota moving forward. But in the near future, like, if I'm a Wolves fan, like, obviously Wolves fan, but, like, if I'm a Wolves listener right now, be excited for the next few years. Like, the five guys that Colton just named, like, that's a really good starting five, whether you're in the West or the East. So that's a good team right there.
All right, everyone, that's it for us. We'll be talking about the L.A. Lakers tomorrow. They are going to be the second in the three-game road trip for the Timberwolves before they go on to play the Utah Jazz. So we'll be previewing the matchup there and breaking down everything that you need to know about the L.A. Lakers. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.